From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 103, Rob Parker.
Welcome into Inside the Parker. I am Rob Parker, your host, Hall of Fame voter number 103, and I am thrilled to bring you this podcast every week. I love Major League Baseball, and we have a great show today. We have our special guest, Daryl Strawberry, the former Met, Yankee, Giant, Dodger. He'll join us. Also, Hall of Fame baseball writer Hal McCoy from the Dayton Daily News. We'll also talk to him. And don't forget, we'll let you trash talk on Twitter. Your chance to trash anyone in Major League Baseball or anything in the game. Plus, I'll give you my top three teams in baseball this week. Fasten your seatbelts. The podcast is starting. Here comes Getting Robbed.
Batter up.
To lead off, it's Getting Robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number one.
The New York Yankees are the best team in baseball. Yes, I said it. This is not about the Yankees and the name and the brand and just picking the Yankees because it's East Coast and all that other nonsense that we hear all the time. Let's just face it. It's incredible what they've been able to do, how they've been able to stay afloat. They have 13 players on the injured list, including their three biggest sluggers, Sanchez, Stanton, Judge, Cervino, their top starter. He's injured. How do they keep winning and moving forward? This has been an amazing job by Aaron Boone. It tells you how good and deep the team and the roster is. How about this? Their bullpen came into the season as the number one rated bullpen in baseball, and it got off to a janky start because it wasn't that good. But here they are. In the thick of things, right where they need to be. This reminds me a lot of last year when Judge went out for a chunk of the season. How many games did they win a year ago? 100! They won 100 games. I wonder how many games they would have won had Judge been healthy for a whole year. So we know injuries can derail a team easily. The team on the injured list is better than the team they're playing on the field. Look closely at the Yankees. Do not poo-poo what they're doing. I thought before the season that they would win the AL East and they would make it to the World Series this year. I'm more convinced than ever because of where they've started. They've started in a hole from the injuries. And somehow, some way, the Yankees are winning without their guys, without their lineup. How? That's because they're that good. That's when you look at teams. Not when everybody's there and they go through a little slump or whatever. What happens when you don't have all your men? So if you're really paying attention, watch when the Yankees get healthy. Watch when their lineup is whole. Watch when their stars are off the injured list and in the lineup. The Yankees are a potent, well-balanced, and deep baseball team.
Number two.
Some people don't understand what Jake Arrieta said when he called out Bryce Harper for getting tossed out of that Mets game on Monday. No, people. Jake Arrieta got it right. Now, it's not a big deal. You don't need to come to blows. But his point was well taken. The team was flat. It couldn't afford to have its star, Bryce Harper, tossed out of the game in the fourth inning. The Phillies wound up losing to the Mets in that game. But it's the right thing. The team needs Bryce Harper to be there. I understand it. You need that bad. He's out there, he's trying to win. He gets it. The umpire that both teams were complaining about, but Harper said something apparently the umpire couldn't take and tossed him. I just think Arrieta's point is well taken. It's something that even Bryce Harper acknowledged, and he said, quote, I got to stay in, end quote. And he's right. They need his bat. They need him to stay in. You can't miss a few at-bats over and letting the umpire get you out of the game. Bravo to Jake Arrieta for speaking up and not throwing Harper under the bus, but telling him, dude, we need you. That's leadership. That's a veteran standing up and saying something when other guys wouldn't have said a word.
Number three.
Tuesday night marked the 20th anniversary of the night Cardinals third baseman Fernando Tatis hit two grand slams in one inning against the Dodgers. I mean, just think of that. I just can't imagine. How could you hit two grand slams in one inning? It might have been one of the most unbelievable feats in the history of baseball.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
Let's welcome in Daryl Strawberry, the 8-time All-Star, of course, National League Rookie of the Year in 1983, and he won 4 World Series, 1 with the Mets and 3 with the Yankees. Daryl, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob, man. It's good to talk to you, bro.
No doubt about it. Hey, let's just jump right in. Ron Darling came out with a book, and he talked about a Lenny Dykstra racist rant that went on that helped the team win the World Series in 1986. Do you remember that, or where are you on this story?
No, I mean, I don't remember that. And, you know, I spoke about it before, and I think it's really unfair that you would put Lenny in such a situation where nobody else heard him say anything, and it didn't lead us on to win the World Series. It led us to get back into the World Series with the game Lenny had, a leadoff home run, and I believe, and Carter hit 2 home runs that night, I believe. So that's really what got us back into play in that World Series 1986, where after we went down 0-2 against Boston. So, you know, it's unfortunate that Ron would, you know, throw Lenny on the bus like that. And I don't think a lot of people were really happy about that because we were all there and we never heard anything like that said.
Yeah, it was definitely a story that was out there. So I want to check with the source. You were there. Hey, the current baseball players, I think most people arguably say that Mike Trout is the best overall player. All the analytic people, they love his stats and his WAR and all that. But I'm not do regular baseball fans appreciate Mike Trout from the standpoint of if you put him up against Aaron Judge, who's the big, you know, home run hitter, and he's a really good outfielder. He reminds me more of like you with the beautiful swing and the home runs. Can fans really appreciate him? Which player do you think fans attach to more? Is it Mike Trout or is it Aaron Judge?
Well, I think they can appreciate both of them because the two of them are young, outstanding, talented players. And you look at a player from the standpoint of, does he play the game the right way? And I think they play the game the right way. They play hard. They play to win. And that's the most important part. Team comes first. You know, Trout has not really been on a team that's been very successful, but Judge has had an opportunity playing in New York with the Yankees. They're always going to be in the middle of competing. So it's a big difference of, you know, team concept of what each one is going through. But as far as overall playing, they're tremendous talent, you know, talented players. You know, they could, you know, do just about anything to help ball club win. And that's what you look for, players who are capable of helping your ball club win, who's going to improve your ball club, who's going to be consistent year in and year out. I mean, if they can stay healthy and stay away from injuries, because injuries are part of sports, but overall they have the ability to do so much for their team that makes their team very successful.
Darren, what about Tim Tebow? Is he going to make it to the major leagues? Are you impressed that this guy was willing? You know, he's a big football star in college, says he wants to play baseball, and is putting in the work in the minor leagues. What do you think about him, and can he make it to the big leagues?
Well, I mean, I'm really impressed with the fact that he is putting in the work, and he's dedicated. I mean, I think that's been his whole motto of who he is. He's always been dedicated, you know, playing football or either baseball. You got to put the work in. I don't know because I really don't follow baseball a lot, so I don't really know where he's at and how well he's playing. But I know it's a grind. I know you got a lot to learn. You know, when you've been playing football and you've been away from a sport like baseball for a very long time, it's not easy. It's just don't mean you're going to jump up and you're going to be successful immediately. And I think he realized that, and he's working hard at it. So I give him credit for all that he's trying to do and what he's trying to accomplish as a baseball player, because it's hard to play baseball.
You know that. It really is. And now tell me, I think your greatest home run ever, and I don't mean in, as far as magnitude, it was a home run you hit off of Ken Daly, a lefty in St. Louis. Do you remember that home run I'm talking about?
No question, a hanging curveball.
Man, you crushed it. You hit it off the clock. Do you remember? What's your favorite home run of all time? Do you have one?
That's one of my favorite home runs of all time is crushing that ball for Ken Daly. Because we wasn't big, we hated the Cardinals. We didn't really like them, and they didn't like us. And it was a real rivalry back then. It's not today. You don't see like the rivalries in baseball. They say Cubs and Cardinals, but the Mets and Cardinals, we really didn't like each other back in those days. And to be able to beat the Cardinals was always a big plus for us, because they beat us with some big home runs. Terry Pemberton hit a home run off of Roger McDowell, center field, Shea Stadium. I'll never forget, and crushed us. You know, so. I mean, that's one of the home runs that beat them to win that ball game, but we didn't go on to win a series. But we came back that next year. I think that was 85.
Right.
Hit that ball. But we came back next year, 86, and we won it all.
Darryl, tell me what you're doing now, man. You're doing so much good work with the young people and people in general. Tell me how you spend your time and what are you doing?
Well, I spend a lot of time, you know, I'm very busy. I'm in ministry. I'm an evangelist. I travel the country. I preach in a lot of churches, and I preach in a lot of men's conferences. And my really focus today now is turned to the younger generation, going into the schools and educating kids about drugs, you know, the danger of drugs. I mean, we have an epidemic in the country. Kids are dying from opiates and heroin addiction. And kids think it's really, in our society, they think it's okay. You know, marijuana is okay, and it's not a drug. And I don't really care if adults smoke marijuana, medical or whatever. That's fine. But, you know, kids don't understand getting started on that is going to lead them down the wrong road. And, you know, hopefully some of the younger people are listening to me and don't get started, because it leads all kids down the wrong road. There's no great road for young people. You know, I think people sit around and say, well, marijuana is not a drug. Well, anything that alters your mind changes your mind. And people in reality, we don't sit well with that, because we don't think that that's a problem. It's a problem for our younger people, and we need to be more conscious about our younger people instead of just talking about, you know, anybody. I'm not talking about just anybody. Anybody, adults, you're going to do what you want. I'm not really concerned what you do. I'm trying to educate kids about, you know, the situations that are happening in our society, and then hopefully can bring some awareness to them, and they can open their minds and think a little bit more before they get involved.
His name is Darryl Strawberry. Thank you so much, Darryl. Appreciate you joining the podcast.
Hey, Rob, thank you, man. I appreciate you, man. Keep doing great work, man. Y'all doing big things.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Central. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson from FS1 is his name. Analytics BS is his game. What you got?
Thank you, Rob. Baseball is a sport where you always try to contextualize what you're seeing by comparing it with something that happened in the past, right? Mike Trout's better than Mickey Mantle. Adam Ottavino could strike out Babe Ruth every single time, yada, yada. There's a great stat out there called Weighted Runs Created Plus that can help you compare eras. Now, Weighted Runs Created Plus is an offensive stat that measures a player's offensive value while also accounting for ballpark, league, and era the guy played in. Now, league average for the stat is 100. So if a guy's weighted runs created plus is 125, you can say he's 25% better than league average offensively. And you can tell the stat is great because you look at the leaderboards every season, it's the cream of the crop of offensive players. It's Trout, it's Betts, JD Martinez, Christian Yelich, etc. And the all-time single-season leaderboard is full of guys like Bonds and Ruth and Williams and Hornsby. And I know we got a small sample size alert this season, but right now, Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers, a weighted runs created plus of 252, which would be the best single season mark in history, beating Barry Bonds' 244 mark he put up in 2002. And that, Rob Parker, is why I think weighted runs created plus is a stat we should all get behind.
If you say so, Anthony, I guess.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto: if I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
We welcome in Baseball Hall of Fame writer Hal McCoy. He's a contributor to the Dayton Daily News, and of course he has his own website, halmccoy.com. Hal, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Rob. So great to hear from you, buddy.
No doubt about it. It was great covering baseball with you back in Cincinnati. Tell me, you told me so many great stories. I would love for you to tell me about the Clay Carroll story.
Oh, that one is a classic, Rob. I walked into the clubhouse one day, and Clay Carroll was sitting in his locker. And he called me over and he said, "Hal, you're a good man with words, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, I hope so. That's how I make my living." He said, "Well, what does this word platonic mean?" And I said, "That means somebody just wants to have a friendly relationship with you, nothing more." And he looked at me and he said, "That bitch."
He had no idea she broke up with him. Basically, Hal, he had no idea.
No idea, yeah. Platonic. I guess she told him she wanted a platonic relationship, and he didn't know what it was.
That is absolutely classic. You've covered some of the greatest people in the game in your life, in your career. Tell me about Pete Rose and how did this go astray? Because from the standpoint of it, looked like baseball was bending and was going to let him get in, and he kind of botched it at the end, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He's always his own worst enemy. I mean, he shoots himself in both feet all the time. As soon as it looks like that they're going to forgive him and let him enter, he goes about and does something else. And, of course, he's got the sickness of the gambling, and to this day he continues doing it. So, like I say, he just does everything to keep himself out of the Hall of Fame.
That might be one of the saddest stories, Hal, because he was a great baseball player. And to this day, I believe that if he would have just apologized and owned up to it originally, they would have forgave him. He went to Gamblers Anonymous, and he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Am I wrong?
I said that. I have said that and said that and said that over and over again, that if he had just done a mea culpa at the beginning, and said, "You know, I did it. It's a forgiving country." He would have been forgiven. He probably would have got a year suspension, and then after retired, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. But he is just so stubborn, and is so sad, because he was a great friend of mine and a great copy, a great guy to talk to, but just a sad caricature of himself.
Speaking of sad, can we talk about the late Marge Schott? I mean, what a character she was. I was around for a little bit. Hal, remember when she banned us from eating in the press dining room if we wrote something that she didn't like?
I got banned three times, and fortunately our good friend Eric Davis would send us pizza to the press box when we got banned from the press box. Yeah, she got me three times, and I'll never forget, Rob, when you and I were covering together in St. Louis, and you wrote a Sunday column and said that Marge's operation of a baseball team was like a mom and pop. And Lou Piniella got hostile and called you in. And you went up in my estimation that day because you stood right up to Lou Piniella. That's a tough thing to do.
No doubt. Sweet Lou, he could be tough. No doubt about it.
Yes.
So tell me about, of all the stuff, I know the Reds made a lot of moves this past offseason trying to bolster their team. And they got Yasiel Puig from the Dodgers in the trade. Did you like that?
Yeah, I liked it at the time. And unfortunately, you know, they got Yasiel Puig, they got Matt Kemp, and they got Alex Wood. And they got rid of Homer Bailey and his big salary. But Matt Kemp just went on the DL today, and he's hitting 200, struggling mightily. He fractured a rib in San Diego Sunday. Puig is hitting like 163 and struggling, but, you know, the fans love him. So you know, he's been a great addition. But Alex Wood is on the DL with a sore back. So they haven't gotten much out of it yet.
No, not yet. But you know what? I love that they tried to make some moves to make something happen. Cincinnati is the best baseball. Cincinnati and St. Louis, Hal, are the two best baseball towns. I tell people all the time, I never worked in St. Louis, but it's unbelievable, Cincinnati and St. Louis.
Could not agree with you more. I always loved to go to St. Louis because no matter where their team was, that stadium was full, and downtown was all red, people dressed in red. And, you know, and the Reds being the first professional team, it's always been a great baseball town. So, yeah, after finishing last four straight years, they finally gone out and tried to do something and at least entertain the people that they haven't been able to do the last 4 years.
One of the best in the business, one of my friends, a guy I feel privileged and honored that I work side by side with you. His name is Hal McCoy, the Hall of Fame baseball writer from the Dayton Daily News, and you can check out his work on halmccoy.com. Thanks, Hal.
Thank you, Rob. Great to hear from you, buddy.
Fasten your seatbelt.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Here comes Parker's top three MLB teams this week.
Here we go.
Number three.
The Philadelphia Phillies. As of Tuesday, they were in second place in the NL East, and I know it hasn't. They got it off to a much better start. It's cooled down a little bit, but they do have all the pieces. I like where they're going. I like that Bryce Harper has been a nice spark plug to start. So I'm with the Phillies right there at number three. It's early, but I like what they have so far.
Number two.
The Los Angeles Dodgers, that powerhouse, that juggernaut, home runs, crazy. Dodgers will win the NL West. We know that. They're loaded. The other teams don't. But Cody Bellinger has come back, leading the league in hitting. It's just an offensive juggernaut. They are number two.
Number one.
Hold on to your bonnets, because I'm picking the New York freaking Yankees at number one. I know they're only a couple of games over 500, but they have 13 players on the injured list, including Sanchez, Stanton, Judge, and they're still winning. They won 100 games last year with Judge missing a big chunk of time. This is a juggernaut. It's the best team in the league. Now it's time for Trash Talk Twitter.
Bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA. And it isn't even close.
And this week's Trash Talk Twitter winner is JD at the Smack. He's trashing Tigers first baseman Miguel Cabrera. He still can't get off the 2012 World Series when Miguel struck out with the bat on his shoulder as the Giants swept the Tigers. And he tweets this: what if I told you that baseball player making $30 million a year? What if I told you that Chris Davis, who endured a 62-plate appearance hitless streak, has more home runs and more RBIs than this Miguel Cabrera? For being this week's winner, JD wins a new era Tigers baseball cap. Congratulations. Don't forget, if you want to get in, hit us up at ParkerPodcast1 on Twitter.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA, and it isn't even close.
Baseball doesn't break the hearts of its fans. The NFL has already broken so many hearts in the past 35 years or so. Don't forget, the Oakland Raiders won't be playing in Oakland after 2019, right? And they're moving to Las Vegas. And the Chargers left San Diego, and they're in L.A. too. My point? It doesn't happen in baseball. Here's how many Major League Baseball teams moved in the same time where the NFL has had so much movement since 1982, and the answer is one. Just the Montreal Expos became the Washington Nationals in 2005. They are the only MLB team to move since 1972. Baseball won't do that to you. They're rooted. They understand what the baseball means to fans and to community. They don't pick up and leave in the middle of the night like the Baltimore Colts did when they moved to Indianapolis. Those days don't happen in baseball. That's reason 155 why baseball is better than the NBA and the NFL.
Here's the 3-2. And strike three called on the inside corner. Ball game over.